Welcome to this week's podcast of Two Men in the Middle, where two men in the middle of America's heartland pontificate about news, world events, and our politics. I'm Brandon Kinnig.
I'm Craig Huey.
Craig, so only 1 week since we restarted the podcast, and it feels like we have 6 months of news and just 7 days, one of those weeks.
We talked about this coming in the building. How do you follow the news these days? There's so much going on. Have you developed a system or a technique for how you ingest cable news podcasts? Just what system are you using to filter some things out but give you enough news that you need?
I don't have a tried and true system. I receive email digest from some of my favorite organizations I subscribe to that send me curated links to news articles daily. I'm also signed up and get the New York Times breaking news alerts so that I can know kind of in the moment. And that is helpful because there's times where I'll get something that's curated and not go back and read it right away. But if I get something that's breaking news, I'm more apt to read it in real time.
Yeah.
And what is it? X and Threads and Facebook. I get a lot of news from there that I elsewhere would get.
So you do better with like those newsletter, those email newsletters.
Yes.
Longer format.
I rely on them a lot.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So
and
you can read those.
Links. Yeah.
You take your time with those, and that's how you do. Okay.
I do. And I should say there are some articles that I read entirely, but a lot of the long form articles I don't. I browse them and I skim them and I get glean information. The shorter the article, I'll read it in full. If it's a really compelling deep dive into something I strongly care about, then I'll bookmark it and go back later. And like uninterrupted time, undistracted time, I'll dive into it. But I don't know that I have a true system other than I rely a lot on those email digest with news digest with links that are curated. And then I do a lot of browsing and perusing and social media, some of which I end up commenting on either to my detriment or, you know, for positive reasons.
Oh, yeah. I love when you comment because you'll take some Republican kookiness and add a little bit of normalcy to it. Then you could just watch the flame come at you.
And then sometimes it results in getting news attention like this last week.
Let's talk about your conversation with Rachel Maddow's producer.
Yeah, so this was fascinating. So for those that don't know, there's a local news story here in the Kansas City area that blew up from last weekend. The county and the state party in conjunction had a fundraiser this past weekend at the Overland Park Convention Center. And as part of that fundraiser, they had an exhibit where they had like an effigy and a dummy of Biden that they invited people to kick and punch and otherwise assault. So this was captured on video and initially uploaded to Rumble, but it first received attention because the former state party chairman, this is all kind of insider baseball politics, former party chairman who was more of a normie, who has had a lot of resentment against the current party chair, who's a MAGA vaccine, probably vaccine denier too, so that's not a Freudian slip necessarily.
Okay, Aaron Rodgers.
election denier. And the county chair, who's a good best friend of his, is also an election denier. Full frontal MAGA, purge the party of anyone who doesn't agree with them. So the former chairman posted about this, still resentful after what happened with this party chairman getting elected. And it blew up. I commented on his post about it. About how, you know, while maybe shocking, we shouldn't be surprised that this is just a natural progression of the Trump era and what we've seen with the cult-like mentality that some of these people
and
have.
The videos of this, it's a bunch of people my age, mid-50s, punching, hitting, kicking this effigy of Biden.
Some of whom seem to have a lot of pent-up rage.
They hit
there's one guy
bat.
Who's just like,
it's all pretty stupid. I was just waiting for someone to blow out a hip or tear an ACL or have a heart attack when I was watching that.
And I should note that the party convention looks like it wasn't well attended. It was very old and very white in terms of the attendance.
Do you know who the musical entertainment was?
Oh, that's right. How did we not talk about that? Ted Nugent.
Ted Nugent. I mean, nothing says party like Ted Nugent.
Right? I mean, that's going to appeal to younger people.
First sign you're doing something wrong, Ted Nugent's there.
And I should say, as a guest speaker, they also brought back the former, now disgraced Attorney General of Kansas, Phil Klein, who had left the state almost 20 years ago now. So it was really. And you
just had a tweet saying, hey, this isn't normal, guys. No. I've been there before. This isn't.
No, this is normal. And I added that I was a former chairman of the Kansas Young Republicans and how abnormal this was. And those comments, though, like got picked up by local news outlets who started including my comments in their stories. And then I got a call from the Kansas City Star to do an interview, and they published more of my comments and the interview I did with them and an article they did. UK Daily Mail reached out. Actually, my comments were featured in a Yahoo Canada news item today.
Brandon,
so,
this is our big chance. If you could get on Maddow, wear two men in the middle shirt, we got it.
Culminating in Maddow's producer reaching out to me by email yesterday, did a fantastic long interview with her. Unfortunately, none of that interview made it into her show. But I will say that interview that I did with her producer was less than 3 hours before her show premiered yesterday. So yeah. They were scrambling to get that content.
Still get it.
But they still got a comment from me. So they referred to me as, I should say, Rachel Maddow referred to me as a former Kansas Young Republicans chairman. And she posted my comment about the cult-like mentality.
Yeah.
So it made it into her segment about it. But this story was on CNN. It was on MSNBC. I mean, it went national pretty quickly.
Well, Brandon, like there was ever a return path for you from the Kansas Republicans, this should just throw a match on that path and... You know, you're never getting invited back now, I don't think.
I'm sure not, but I have good company because there's a lot of former Republicans, especially, I should say, national young Republicans who are kind of in the same boat as I, who have either left the party or who feel isolated, excluded,
I had a buddy who sent me that video, and I said, yeah, Brandon got a call from Maddow's producer about this. And he's like, did Brandon shoot this video? I'm like, I don't think Brandon's been to a Kansas meeting in a long, long time.
That was funny.
Time.
Rachel Maddow's producer asked me, were you there? I'm like, no. I have not gone to any of those meetings in
those days are just far behind.
If I did, like, I would be getting all kinds of dirty looks, and it would be very uncomfortable if I showed up to one of those.
This podcast would take on a much different tone, Brandon, if you were still active with the Kansas legislative group. Because they are proven to be an unwieldy group.
I mean, even like traditional conservatives are not active with them anymore. Like their base now is just the MAGA trills, essentially. Like it's completely
changed.
Again,
it's a base that wants Ted Nugent at a meeting where we beat up an effigy of Biden.
Yeah.
I don't think you need to really say anymore.
That's essentially what we're talking about. Yeah.
What do you think of that banging State of the Union Biden pulled off?
So very high energy, very aggressive. I do agree with, I think some of the Republicans who are critical that it was, much more partisan than State of the Union said to be. It was very partisan. And he did not shy away from that. Although I think that was intentional and that he wanted to show as much vigor as possible to refute the narrative about him being incompetent. And
it is an election year. Yeah. Those take a turn to the partisan and the political.
You got to rally your base
all the time. So.
So I don't really begrudge him for doing that. I do think that, and it was comical seeing the engage with Marjorie Taylor Greene when she walked up to him.
Hey, Marge accomplished what she wanted. She got him to say Lincoln Riley instead of Lincoln Riley.
Yeah.
If I'm saying that correctly, she got what she wanted out of the State of the Union. She yelled, she got his attention. Her issue got to the State of the Union because of her. That's a huge win for her.
It is a huge win for her, but I don't think it was a loss for him. I actually thought that the fact he engaged was good, in terms of him responding and having that interplay.
Do you like that? Do you like that yelling at the president while his speech, that kind of British? I hate it.
I hate it. And that's become the norm. Remember when that was an outlier when Joe Wilson of South Carolina yelled, "You lie," during President Obama's State of the Union? And he was actually hushed down by his fellow colleagues. Now that doesn't happen. Like, it's multiple members of Congress that do it on the Republican side, and it's performative. And they're not held responsible anyway. Yeah. So I don't like it. But at the same time, if they're going to do it, I think if you're the other side, you have to respond in tandem. You can't,
I think so.
It's rough and tumble politics. No. And Mike Johnson, his smirks bothered me and his eye rolls during the thing. He could have decided what he wanted to do. Like, regarding Ukraine, Biden didn't have some really good one-liners in there at times, about,
all politics is performative. The State of the Union has taken on an over-the-top performance.
Yes.
It needs to go right back to what it needed to be in the Constitution, a letter.
Instead of a
just
speech.
Just once a year, write an email to Congress, we'll publish it, someone will read it. the State of the Union, I think, is becoming very antiquated and just not needed at this point in time.
Right. There were, I will say that I don't think this is going to move the needle as far as polling goes, but there were no major gaffes. There were no major blunders that Republicans can capture and use in ads and that type of thing. So it was a win for Biden in that sense, that there were no major mistakes that, you know, and can breathe a sigh of relief.
There's a couple new policies. I mean, he talked about giving some home credit for buyers to offset some of the mortgage problems right now. That sounds like something that's doable. The building the pier on the Gaza Strip, I don't really know how doable that is, but at least it's something to try to get more aid into that area of the world.
He did set himself apart, even where some might disagree on his policy prescriptions on the domestic side. Like, he's providing solutions, and there's a contrast to be made with the Republicans right now, which aren't proposing, they're not proposing anything. Like, it's just gridlock, dysfunction, stop anything from happening. And so, you know, he did set himself apart there. But yeah, other than that, for me, the real story was the response to the State of the Union, because I really don't pay attention to those. It's a thankless job. You don't have an audience. You don't have
But before we get to that lunatic, I think we both agree that Biden should expect no massive jump in polling or popularity. He executed the bare minimum. He did not have a verbal meltdown, and he seemed to be coherent the entire time.
Yeah.
And that's the best he can do.
I don't think – I can't recall the last time a State of the Union has – swayed voters in any election, and so it's not going to happen this time. But it's also not going to hurt him, so at best it's just, it's, you know, negligible. Yeah. It has
he held form.
Yeah.
Katie Britt.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Where do I start? So
but let's start here. Brandon, you're probably the only person I know who might be able to answer this for me. Who did she work with? Give me a little bit about what your thought. Who was put in her line of sight as her speechwriter and her coach to deliver this? Because I can't believe she did all this on her own.
She did not. In fact, so I do know for a fact that she had members of the entire Republican leadership team. I believe Senator Joni Ernst. I know Roger Marshall of Kansas, a few others who were involved in this production, which is what I'll call it because it was a production. And she also had, for people that don't know, she's a junior senator from Alabama.
Was she appointed?
No, she has been elected in her own right, but she was just elected in 2022, I believe, so rather new. But she used to work, she was chief of staff for Senator Richard Shelby, who was a longtime senator from Alabama, Democrat turned Republican, who was very much kind of old school, mainstream, get things done type of member of Congress. She worked for him as chief of staff, took up the mantle, was not Trump's pick, because if you remember, she ran the primary against Mo Brooks, who ran as the MAGA Trumpian. And Trump initially supported Mo Brooks, but then when Mo started falling behind in the polls, Trump switched his support because he didn't want to support a loser, and he supported Katie Britt. But Katie Britt is young, 42, so they really wanted to contrast the age with Biden by having her give it. Now, her background was really more kind of like Chamber of Commerce. In fact, she was on the state Chamber of Commerce in Alabama. But she has played up to MAGA quite a bit and become more MAGA. But yeah, so this production, she's in this kitchen, right? And I brought this up in conversations I had, because I'm pretty sure the last person who gave the State of the Union was also a Republican woman, and they also put her in a kitchen. And I think that there's bad optics to that. She's pretty accomplished in her own right, but Republicans have a tendency of wanting to just be like, oh, I'm the average mom in the kitchen, and I have two kids, and I'm married, and that's all that matters. And it's like,
this is what I don't understand. That was a fake kitchen. That kitchen didn't exist completely. In any home.
It was very
big. I didn't get that.
Well, first of all, whose kitchen at home is like that? It was bare. No. There was nothing there. Nobody has a bare kitchen that's spotless and clean like that.
Nancy Pelosi stepped in this once. This is a hole you don't step in. You don't give, I'm sitting in my kitchen in my home to give this folksy presentation that I want to talk to about. Oh, and the refrigerator behind me is $15,000.
Yeah.
That's what I don't get. So you're in this staged kitchen.
She's just like you, Craig. She's just like us.
Correct. Yeah. We have a $15,000 refrigerator with matching cabinet panels on it. No family with kids would have that because they would destroy it immediately.
And that kitchen was huge. The island was huge. So, like it seemed to go on forever.
So right off that, starting in the kitchen, don't have a problem with that. There's some things that we're going to have to maneuver, but that's okay. If you want to start with, this is us sitting down to do kitchen table. I'm with you.
And that's what they were going for. But again, I do have a problem with it because it's overdone. They've done it before. And I feel like it always is the woman, again, like not trying to say it's sexist, but since when do they place like Tim Scott in a kitchen or when they have a man give the address? Marco Rubio was not in a kitchen when he did the response.
As the king of all Republican consultants, this is my rule. If you're going to do it in a kitchen, it's your kitchen.
Yeah.
It's your personal kitchen.
Yeah.
Because you have to tell people, I'm coming to you from my kitchen where my family eats meals and discuss these things. Give it some sort of authenticity if you're going to try to say, look, I have a kitchen Fair just enough. Like yours and I talk to my family here. Then make it a real kitchen. These are easy stumbles not to make. But we're kind of splitting hairs.
Let's get
into the real part here.
So she gives a speech talking about, you know, this just doomsday America under Biden. You know, crime is at an all-time high. I mean, people cannot afford everything. Her delivery and tone is interesting because she over-enunciates. So whoever was training her, she completely overdid it in terms of over-enunciating every word to the point where it was painful. Like when you are trying to emphasize, you emphasize on a word level or a phrase level. She emphasized everything and had multiple pauses where it didn't make sense, kind of like this, and kept this tone going.
Okay, but now, right in the middle of the sentence, completely switch your emotional affect. Go from affable and happy to completely sullen and crying. Just like that.
That's what she went back and forth. And if you watch some of the video of it, it's where she was about to like enraged and just like felt like she was going to just like burst into tears. And then she'd smile. And then she'd go into very happy mode. And then she'd go into concerned mode. And then she'd go into like, I mean, it was kind of mind boggling because nobody, again, that's not normal. There's no authenticity there. That's like a production where she's like rehearsing like, and not even appropriate pause, like just immediately goes in from one emotion to the next, which is striking.
Then her big stick the landing moment was a lie about Biden and the border.
Yes. So, you know, she tells this story about going to the border. You know, she claims that, you know, Biden has abandoned the border. She went to the Rio Grande and she met with this woman, Jacinto, who's a victim of sex trafficking. And she emphasizes how she was raped repeatedly, numerous times.
It's a horrible story.
Horrible story. But by the way, like, the average like mom at the dinner table isn't talking about rape like in such like dramatic terms like she was. That was a little bit off-putting and odd and creepy.
She literally made it sound like a group of people crossed the border, drugged this woman back to Mexico where they raped her and forced her to be a prostitute.
She said this is Biden's policies. This is what this caused.
Basically what happened.
Big problem though, because this woman was trafficked in the years 2004 to 2008. So we're talking almost 20 years ago during President George W. Bush's administration. And guess what? She made the statement after she said this that we would not stand for this happening in a third world country, let alone in the United States of America. Yeah. I believe that was her exact quote. Roughly.
Something close
to that. But guess what? Sex trafficking didn't even happen in the United States. It happened in Mexico, and it didn't happen by the cartels, which is what she said. It was not cartel driven because this woman has come forward. She said she was not trafficked in the United States. She was not trafficked by cartels. She feels used by American and Mexican politicians, and this is an example. And I am not saying this to demean this poor woman in any way, because she is being used as a prop by multiple politicians, but it's an example of almost like a stock victim, right? Because this woman has been used by multiple Republicans. If you go back in press releases for the last like 8 years, they've all used her as an example, even though she is not a current day example.
Yeah.
You have to go way back in time. And so to lead with that, because it's not only completely misleading, it's a lie, but it also points to the fact that the border crisis and, you know, this type of thing isn't new. Like, this is, you know, it may be worse now, but this has been a problem going back multiple presidencies. And so she really stepped in. And then when she was on Fox News, and at least the host did question her about it, she really didn't address it. She just kind of, she made a statement about, she's like, well, it was obvious because I said the girl was 12 and she's a woman now. Yeah. Like, somehow it was on the viewer to, like, piece together all of that when she clearly followed it up by saying we wouldn't stand for this in a third world country, let alone in America. Like, that clearly implies it was America. It clearly implies this is Biden's failed policy. Yeah. And that wasn't the case at all.
So, Brandon, help me out here. Was that the Republicans' attempt to connect with suburban women? Is that what that was?
I think so. And it was relying on fear, you know, looking out for your families, fear of crime, fear of fentanyl coming over the border, all of that. But I think it backfired. Well, okay, let's step back. Let's be honest. Not a ton of people watch the State of the Union.
No.
Even less people see the response because people don't keep their channel on, you know, and wait the 15 minutes or so for that to start. So, but it's not going to convince people either. What was striking to me is that her remarks were widely panned from everywhere on the far left to the anti-Trump center right to the MAGA right. I mean, when you have people like Megyn Kelly saying that she is inauthentic and awful, you know, you've lost your audience.
You've lost the thread at that point. There's a phrase in politics, first one to normal wins. That was not normal by
any stretch of the imagination.
Anybody looking at that thinking, what the hell is anybody with that looked at that looking for some normalcy were like, this is exactly what I thought the Republicans would do.
And for those that didn't see it, Scarlett Johansson on SNL did a great parody of it. It ranks up there with like the Sarah Palin impersonation by Tina Fey. I forgot to tell you again, because I'm a political nerd. Do you know who she reminded me of just in the way she spoke? This is really going back into political history. 2014. Do you remember Christine O'Donnell who ran
The witch.
I'm not a witch.
I'm not a witch.
If you saw her I'm not a witch ad, her delivery was a lot like Katie Britt. It was the same tone and it came across as inauthentic and weird and creepy. And of course, that was also there was a parody of that on SNL, which was really fantastic.
Yeah,
but it's
Scarlett Johansson was just spot on.
I mean, her mannerisms.
She's married to Colin Jost,
yes,
the head writer
and SNL.
SNL dude. So.
By the way, every time Scarlett Johansson has been a guest on SNL, like she blows it out of the park with her monologues and her skits. Like
she's so talented. Yeah. So Biden's not going to get some 5-point jump in the polls. Republican make no ground because once again, they just cannot seem to find a formula to connect with anything female. It's just is that due to lack of leadership? Is it due to lack of representation of women in the party? Is it help me understand why are the Republicans so weird with women these days?
Well, the lack of women representation is a massive problem, which they've been unable to solve for. And that leads to they have very few women that they can platform, you know, when they want to deliver a coherent alternative. And when they do, because they have fewer women, they have to rely on older white men to guide those women and to, help them rehearse and prepare and prep. So Katie Britt, her natural self, is much less off-putting than what we saw that night, but she had a group of older white men around her saying, you need to say it this way, you need to say this, you need to do this. So,
well, in the Senate, if you don't want an old white guy, what do you got, 4 or 5 women or Tim Scott? That's it.
Yeah.
I mean, the cupboard's pretty bare.
You don't have that many Republican women.
If you're shopping
women,
for anything other than an old white guy,
right?
The Senate, the Republican, is not where you want to go.
Exactly. So hence is the issue. And so, and the problem is, I don't know if the old white guys are ever going to realize, hey, this is our fault. We botched this.
I can guarantee you that won't happen. There'll be all kinds of things that do happen, but old whitey admitting the problem is me, that is not going to happen.
So there was an audio clip I heard from yesterday from Senator Roger Marshall of Kansas, which I think he said the quiet part out loud because I don't think obviously they would have wanted him to say this, but he said, he's like, yeah, I think we made a mistake when we were blah, 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 helping coach her. Like we shouldn't have, like usually that's not said that directly, but again, he has foot and mouth disease, so he kind of just says things kind of like Trump that should not be said, and so that's what happened.
So I mean, Biden usually overperforms at the State of the Union. This is his, third State of the Union, fourth? He generally delivers these pretty well. And I got to listening to the podcast last week, and I was really hard on Biden. I think at one point I even called it a joke that Biden was running for president. And after listening to that, I was like, well, was that just because the microphones had been off for a while and I was talking on mic and just let words fall out of my mouth? Or do I really, really feel that way? And I started thinking about why is it that I have no faith, or I have such a feeling of dread about this election, not only for Biden, but just for Democrats in general. So I started looking through some of the polling that's been setting me off a little bit. And I saw this tweet that, you ever see like the perfect tweet, but you're in your car looking at Twitter, yes, which you shouldn't be.
Yeah.
And then you can never find the tweet again.
So many times that's happened.
I think this came from Dan McLaughlin at National Review.
Okay.
Where he tweeted out a graph that shows Biden is only +8 when it comes to all non-white voters.
That might be the thread that I saw too.
This is the thing, folks, that if you're a Democrat, this is what has me in four alarm fire mode, in that the world is burning down and we're sitting here debating Biden's mental faculties while we should be doing something very different. So I wanted to go through a little bit kind of where we stand with kind of voting against, well, number one, what do the polls tell us, and what challenges does Biden have with non-white voters? So first, I wanted to go back to 2016, go back to the 2020 election. The common theme on election night in 2020 was that Black women saved democracy because they voted for Biden. That's simply not true. Biden won the election in 2020 because 5% of white men changed their vote from Trump to Biden. That breakdown was 4% of those white men had college degrees, 1% of those did not. Biden, across the board with all other ethnic groups, lost voting.
He lost votes.
He lost Latinos by, I think, -8 over what Hillary lost them at.
Yeah, and just to specify, he did lose them overall, but his margin fell by 8.
Correct. He was 8 points less than Hillary Clinton. So just to kind of bring everybody to where we were sitting in 2020, when it comes to what is the breakdown of white vote versus non-white vote for Biden and Trump. Biden basically was at 61% white, 39% voter of color, a nice 60-40 split. Trump was 85% white, 15% voter of color. So that puts Biden at +25 voters of color in 2020. That is generally a weak performance by a Democrat. Mm-hmm. We're typically +30 or above. So in a close election, if you go from +25 voters of color to +8, you lose.
A microcosm of that is Florida, because Hillary only lost Florida by 1 point. Biden lost it by 5. Hillary won Hispanics in Florida by, I think, almost 20 points, 16 to 20. Biden only won them by like 3 to 4 points. So, you know, you can go state by state and see the loss of vote there.
I mean, this is the type of polling that's driving me to the point of, guys, we are in an existential crisis on the Democratic side of the aisle. I get it. The Republicans are having a very public meltdown. It's very fun to watch. It's very captivating. It's very much soaking up a lot of the energy in the conversation right now. What I'm saying to my Democratic friends is, we are in as bad of shape. If this polling for voters of color is true, this means our coalition that we've ridden for the past 100 years is fracturing or fractured. And it means we're going to lose in 2024. And it means we're going to have to put a coalition back together. So why is Biden losing? So I guess let me phrase it this way. Why are voters of color shifting away from the Democratic Party? Is it because Trump has done something to entice them? Does he have some new policy? plan? Does he have some sort of social program?
No.
No, he's done nothing. In fact, I think you would agree with me that he has alienated almost every voting class of color. He, at some point in time, he has said or done something dumb to every single non-white voting group. But his popularity in 2024 is greater than it was in 2020. The only theory that makes sense is this is a reaction to Biden being so unpopular that he is now losing. Or not losing, I'm sorry, that's not accurate. He has taken a plus 25 advantage in voters of color and turned that into plus 8. Again, I can't say this enough to anybody hearing the sound of my voice. If that number is directionally true, doesn't even have to be completely accurate. If it's just pointing in the right direction, Biden's getting wiped out in November. And that's what I can't find. I tried Googling this. Hey, show me some articles about, you know, Biden only being up plus 8. Show me some information about voters. There's nothing out there. Nothing out there. And this is my point that to the Democrats. How do we drag back to this issue? Because I think the issue with voters of color that we have is a Biden-specific issue. Mm-hmm. I think it's him. Maybe we shouldn't engage in every single cultural battle that there is to fight. Black folks, minorities, Hispanics, they're typically more culturally conservative than most Democrats.
They are, yeah.
Maybe this is something that it's part of our strategy is pushing these people away. But I would just like the Democrats to at least acknowledge we have a massive coalition problem with people of color that might be specific to Joe Biden. And the only way we're going to get around that is to get rid of Joe Biden. And this is what really pisses me off. If you're sitting there as the Democrats and you know this, you see this, how are we rolling into this in what is allegedly the most important election of our lifetime, knowing we have this problem and this problem might be tied to one individual person? That the inaction on that is what's really driving my pessimism about Biden's reelection and the Democratic Party in general. I'm all for the Republicans' meltdown. I'm here for it. Meltdown, what Ken Buck did today, I love. Just the Republicans deserve it. They have heaped this all on themselves, and you have to eat every little piece of it.
So Congressman Ken Buck, who was part of the Freedom Caucus, quote-unquote bucked his colleagues by not subscribing to the big lie.
I think you've got the four letters right. You just replace the B with one, and I think you got what he really did.
Touche.
But this is my point. The Republicans are in such disarray. So what Buck did is he's quitting next week.
Yeah, he was already not running again, but he said, hey, I'm going to quit next week. I'm so fed up with this. I'm resigning next week. And then did you see like his broadside against Johnson?
Well, who he really is trying to troll here is Boebert.
Right.
Because Boebert may drop out. She may drop out of Congress, right?
Right.
To participate in this special election.
And he's trying to give a temporary appointment to somebody else who would have the advantage over Boebert.
Because Colorado, the 5th District of Colorado, is a very red district.
It is. And Boebert is a carpetbagger. She's correct. Leaving her own district.
But she knows that's the only chance she has.
Right.
I'm here for all of that. I like Ken Buck. I'm glad what he said as he walked out.
So Ken Buck, the great thing too is Mike Johnson, who I could not abhor even more. So he claimed that Ken Buck didn't tell him he was doing this and that he wanted to talk to him and he's going to talk to him first. Ken Buck said, yeah, I told him. But earlier today, Ken Buck said, this place just keeps going downhill. Mike Johnson's ability to talk me into staying here is going to be as successful as his ability into talking me into unconstitutional impeachments.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, nicely done.
Here for it. And there's no way as a Democrat you can't look at that and think we have every party structural advantage in politics there is to have, because we do.
Yeah. I mean, look at Laura Trump taking over the RNC, has no experience.
But we're burying ourselves, though. We're burying the lead. We keep talking about this shit instead of saying, guys, the coalition we've put together and that has brought us every single goddamn election win we have appears to be splitting right in front of our eyes over, is it because of the orange guy? I don't think so. I think it's because of our guy.
Yeah.
And unless we have that, until we have that conversation, let me rephrase. If we don't have that conversation, we are going to get shit hammered in November. if we do have that conversation, there's only one thing we can do, and that's we got to replace Biden.
I don't think that's what makes the conversation so difficult.
But we're going to sit here because an 81-year-old sitting president wants to run for the presidency again, and we're going to put so much in jeopardy. If there's one thing the Democrats know is that politics is a team sport. It's time to take one for the team, Joe.
Yeah.
It's time to sit down. And yelling your way through a partisan State of the Union address is not going to get you to where you want to be.
We've talked about time and time again, there's too much on the line this year and going forward. It's just we've seen the impact of one Trump term and what it has meant, just looking at the Supreme Court for our daily lives. And if you think about a second term, it's magnified by 100 times based on who he will have around him and who he'd appoint. And so there isn't room for error. But at the same time, there's also a void of leadership. Nobody wants to be the guy to step up and say,
let's remember all of the rabbits Trump has pulled out of the hat with voters of color.
Yeah.
He's won women. How? He's won women as a group. How? He increased his numbers with Latinos. He increased his numbers with black men. Asian men are voting more for Donald Trump. And he's doing nothing to try to earn this. Am I wrong? This has to be a reaction to the Democrats and Biden specifically. And the fact that we don't see that or won't say that, I believe is the reason why we're going to lose. And I think we're going to lose pretty handedly in November.
I mean, it's either a reaction to lingering perceptions about the economy still not being great, high inflation, which is part of it. But I do think the overriding part, and this actually comes out in focus groups, is the view that Biden is senile and the discomfort that many of these voters have with voting for him because of his age. It usually, I think if you had a younger person who seemed more in command, who did not present as feeble and old, that would displace some of the just lingering economic concerns and people would revert back to kind of natural form and tendency. But they're not, because again, every time they see Biden or the images that come across their screen, his age is reflected back to them in a way that's inescapable.
I mean, most people in the United States didn't know FDR was in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
Because you didn't see the president much. You saw him in a photo occasionally.
Right. We didn't have 24-hour cable media.
Or something. He was always at a podium.
We even have television to the degree we do now. Yeah.
So I bring this up in that Biden's problem is all visuals. The images of him are just of an old, feeble man. And we don't want the president of the United States, who still is the most powerful person in the world and who sits at the biggest army the world's ever seen. We're just at a base level. We're uncomfortable with somebody who presents like Biden physically being in that position. And there's no way, there's nothing he can do to overcome that. Right. So we're just going to sit here with this and see what happens, I guess.
I mean, there's no sign that anybody's going to step up and anything different's going to be done.
I mean, Trump has never had the lead poll position heading into an election. If it's not Biden plus five come November, let me put it this way. I think that most people, you and I have a core disagreement in that I believe there are no gettables in this election. There are no late breakers. What more information do you need about these two gentlemen to make up your mind? I just don't believe.
I think there's a very
there's people out there.
There's a very small but significant segment of people who detest both,
sure,
and who go back and forth deciding which one they want to be their lesser of two evils vote. And so that's why I do think that segment does exist. They may be leaning towards one at the moment, but they're the ones I could see waffling because they abhor both of them to the same degree at this point.
Yeah, I just don't buy that there's somebody out there saying, I just don't know which way I'm going to vote. I mean, Trump has put, there's just so much on tape with these two that I just don't think that's a very big population.
Well, then how else do you explain the polling that shows, like, if Trump were to be convicted before the election, which isn't happening, but if he were,
I don't believe that. If you're going to vote for Trump right now, there's nothing going to change that. Nothing. What possibly could change it?
Yeah.
I do not believe. If you voted for Trump in 2016 and 2020, you're voting for him in 2024, aren't you? If you voted for him in 2020, why wouldn't you vote for him again? I just don't believe there's any gettable people out there. Just from a logic, human perspective.
But haven't we said the entire time? I mean, everything Trump did since 2020, so January 6th, behavior, the court cases, like, normally that should have some type of outsized impact. I mean,
it hasn't. And I don't think it in my theory is it hasn't, because Biden is so historically unpopular.
Because there's been past campaigns, historically presidential campaigns, that have been sunk by much greater, activity and things. Let alone, and again, you can grasp it because there's so much around Trump, but, the fact that Alan Weisselberg, his, financial guy, lied on the stand and is called back up as a witness about the Trump organization. I mean, how many...
This is going to kill Trump. Are we going to go through?
Right.
Till we realize Trump's a shit monster. The more shit you throw on him, the more powerful he becomes. There is nothing you can say or do about Trump. You can make a video. A video can come out of him molesting puppies. It does not matter.
I mean, he said it himself.
The man tried to take over the country in a coup and gains popularity. There's nothing that can happen to him that's going to make him less popular.
It defies belief. I mean, it really does.
And we're sitting here with somebody on the other side who just isn't ready for this fight. Mm. And that's what's driving me to say the Democrats, it's a joke for the party that they know this is coming. They know this is a problem. And we're just going to sit here and do nothing about it while our main rival melts down. The Republicans are opening up this massive wormhole of opportunity for us to come through, and we're just not prepared to do it because the guy at the front of the column is 82 years old, and there's nothing we can do. That's where I'm at with the Biden reelect. The most negative I've ever been with a Democrat.
I was going to say, this is a lot of doom and gloom. I feel like our first two podcasts now are just been like saturated
because
doom and gloom.
Trump shouldn't be here. It's completely illogical that the man is leading this race. Why is he not political, toxic ooze?
Yeah. Instead, he's Teflon. Yeah.
He's Teflon. What was our other topic we were going to talk about? I got so fired up explaining why Biden sucks.
I wanted to talk about TikTok.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Because, again, another opportunity.
Do you use TikTok?
For Democrats, no. So people will send me TikTok videos and I'll watch them, but I do not have a TikTok account. I feel like I don't need to freely hand over my information to be accessed by the Chinese communist government, so I don't do that.
I must admit, TikTok. I use TikTok like YouTube. If you're looking for a how to video,
oh yeah, I mean
TikTok's
there's great ones.
Algorithm
on there.
It can find exactly what you want. It is by far the best app in saying, I'm looking for this content, and you going directly to where that content is.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I had always used YouTube for, was how-to videos. But I know TikTok, it's even more visible and present.
So you don't go down any TikTok rabbit holes? You don't
I do not. Like I said, people send me TikTok videos, and so I've seen many. Like, I'll watch them when I get links to them, but I don't, since I'm not on TikTok, I don't just have that feed where I'm able to go down the rabbit hole. So I do not do that. But so what's notable is that for a while now, there had been this bipartisan effort to pass essentially like a ban on TikTok, or to force TikTok's parent company, which is
ByteDance.
Thank you. I had the bite part and couldn't remember dance. Force ByteDance to sell off TikTok to a non-Chinese entity for it to continue operating in the United States. And if you recall, this was something when Trump was president, he pushed and supported.
Railed against.
Yeah. So bipartisan effort, Democrats and Republicans signed on to this. It's going to be unveiled this week and go to a vote. But a wrench has been thrown in this because Trump has all of a sudden switched his position and no longer supports it. So his reasoning has been because he doesn't want Facebook to become more powerful, and he hates Facebook because they banned him.
Sure.
But the real reason is because there is a billionaire investor who he is relying on to open the floodgates of donor money for him, a Republican investor who just happened to have also have a significant stake in ByteDance.
Sure.
And this investor had a conversation with him recently. And what likely happened was he told him, like, you need to back off of your TikTok ban. And he's like, if you do so, like, I can support you. And the money floodgates would open. This is where we also need, like, the cash register sound effect. Yeah, the cha-ching.
Just, yeah. Here he comes.
Because this is, and so Trump has completely done a 180. I'm very curious to see how many Republicans follow suit and do what their great dear leader says. Marjorie Taylor Greene had this very tortured, ridiculous explanation of why she no longer supports regulating TikTok.
It's really fun to watch people twist themselves into pretzels.
People that were previously like all about the TikTok ban, yeah, they were like, we can't have a Chinese company compromising our national security.
Brendan, are you telling me that the former president's ideology is fungible and can be manipulated
shocking.
In any direction
shocking, I know.
For power and money? I refuse to believe that.
But all jokes aside, this is very serious because also what this tells us is Trump needs cash bad. He has this judgment he has to pay out. He has these attorney fees that are piling up, which is why he could have gained control of the RNC fast enough. But it's a serious national security risk, the fact that he can basically be bought. And if he were to be president again, I mean, holy cow. I mean, what does that mean in terms of foreign entities trying to buy him off in exchange for policy concessions in different areas? It's a very scary proposition.
So I keep trying to figure out from listening to Fox News, what is the actual issue with TikTok? Okay, so the thing they keep saying over and over and over again is the Chinese government is stealing all of your personal information. Okay. What personal information? Is it any different than Instagram, Facebook, or any other Twitter, any other of the social media apps? What is unique about TikTok? Or is the only thing unique about it is that it's Chinese owned? Is that, I think that is the actual problem, right? Is that all of the data.
The government at any point has access to all of that data. And to give an example of why this is problematic and why it's different than, because, I mean, you may remember there's a lot of these Chinese companies that sell like cheap consumer goods.
Yeah,
at, like,
yeah, the little dropship companies. Yeah.
Like Temu and all of these online.
Styrofoam remote control airplane that you throw around, yes. Stuff like that.
So one of those companies within the last 5 years, but was Alibaba.
Yeah.
So kind of big online purveyor of all kinds of cheap consumer goods, novelties. So Alibaba's CEO had the audacity to criticize the Chinese central bank. So what happened was, if you don't remember, he disappeared for a while. No trace of him could be found. He was gone. And so he returned, and he is still seen once in a while. But guess what? Alibaba isn't around anymore like it was in its prior – like, it's gone. And the Chinese government, like that, you know, snapped their fingers, and they took ownership of that company, and they basically, you know, just what's the term I'm looking for? Got rid of all the assets.
Yeah, they just said, we own this now. They nationalized it.
Yeah.
It's just ours.
So that's the difference between the United States and China in terms of what they can do. And so they can do that at any time with TikTok. Not only do they have access to all of the data TikTok has, at any time, and this is why I think it's very stupid for American investors to invest a stake, because that's only good on paper. At any time, the Chinese government could say, we no longer like this company or we don't like their practices, they could take it over. And then, you know, that his last name is Yass, that American GOP mega donor. Like, he will no longer have a stake in the company. All of that will be gone.
Yeah.
But what he's doing is he's trying to buy himself protection from Trump by, you know, so that he will have a stopgap mechanism where he can go to for assistance if that were to happen.
I take a very negative attitude about all of these social media apps and the data they collect. There's a law, I should have looked this up, I don't. I'm not sure when it passed, maybe 2004, but the United States Congress passed a law that the President of the United States signed that basically said, hey guys, it's a-okie dokie with us for any of these app companies to steal any amount of data they want from you. It is just super duper. We're going to make it legal because this is how commerce is going to work on the internet. It seems to me that the logical place to start with TikTok is that law. And why was that law passed? Who passed that law? Who did they pass it for? Wasn't to protect consumers. I just think I get somewhat. The hypocrisy here gets a little bit too much.
Well, I think it's a problem with all the other companies as well, the ones that are based here or in other countries, access to data, the privacy implications. But I do think that when you're talking about a Chinese or Russian-owned company where there is unlimited direct access by those governments, like there's no – they don't have to go through a court order. They don't have to get any type of warrant to access that. Like it's anytime they want. It's a little bit different because both China and Russia are not only known adversaries, but increasingly becoming hostile. They're engaging in statecraft and very aggressive surveillance, spying, covert, engaging in trying to take our intelligence and our secrets and proprietary information, trying to hack into our electrical grids and various banks and institutions. This is happening on a 24/7 basis. That's a whole nother story. We could talk about how we're not equipped for that because we can barely keep up with just the frequency of attacks, cyber attacks coming from China and Russia. But that's a problem when you have an entity from one of those countries specifically based on where we are in this moment in history. If I was talking about like 2009, 2012 even, different story. But 2024, where we are today, that's why it's significant and serious. They could also game the algorithm. What if China decided, because it's a known fact that Chinese children have access to...
Yeah, it's just all educational.
It's educational. That's the difference. They could game the algorithm and show specific content that they want to propagandize, if they want to propagandize their viewpoint or foreign policy positions on any number of areas, they could do so. It becomes a tool then and a weapon.
The U.S. government has done a very poor job of convincing me that TikTok is any more of a threat than Facebook, Instagram, Amazon, or any number of the United States companies that surveil me, take my data as part of my interaction on social media, and then market back to me. I don't really see the difference in the two.
But governments don't have direct access to that data the way that they would in China or Russia.
And I certainly don't. And I don't understand how banning it is the answer to this problem. If the isn't the answer to this problem, you either change the law so this can't happen and you become less exploitive. How about this?
You can't change a law for a foreign-owned company, though.
Like, yes, that, yeah, you can.
I mean, our laws are not going to affect a company that's basically owned by a foreign government. And
we can change data laws around what a company is responsible for their users in a social media app, can't we? We could change the law that if your app is available in the United States, you have to have an opportunity for me to export all of my data, see all the data you have on me, delete that data if I don't want it. So that's what I'm saying.
Those are consumer safeguards.
Consumer protection laws.
But that's
why isn't that the approach we're taking?
That still wouldn't solve the issue of the Chinese government having access to that data. You're talking about consumers being able to see what's being collected on them.
I guess, which is
one thing. That's not preventing governments from collecting that data in the first place.
What is in my mind, I can't make the difference between the Chinese government collecting data on me on TikTok and Google spying on me all day, listening to me on my phone to throw ads at me. What's more evasive?
Well, it's a government weaponizing that and using it in the context of...
And Google's not going to... I think Google weaponizes that now already in commerce against me.
They do that to sell you things. They don't do that in terms of...
And what's the Chinese government wanting to do? I'm guessing they want to sell me things.
But no, it's more than that. I mean, it could be used in the context of military intervention. It could be used in the context of hacking attempts, trying to be able to violate our security in many ways, whether from an institutional basis, a government basis, banking basis, financial basis.
Everything you're saying makes logical sense. Just for some reason, I just don't buy it.
Google isn't going to be hacking into your bank account.
Really? Really? Google's not going to hack my bank account. I don't believe that.
I mean, they're going to be selling you things, and they will continue to sell you things. I mean, that's the basis.
There's a huge issue on Fox right now. Have you seen this with the banking industry? And how many times the banking industry does little searchy searches on their customers' spending that the government or other entities ask them to run?
Like, I have heard about this.
Look for Proud Boys. Look for BLM. Look for Antifa. You don't think Google is in on that? You don't think Google is selling that to the government? You don't think the U.S. government could walk right to Google and see everything they have? I guess for me, it's difficult to draw a distinction in who is the real threat here. And saying the Chinese government is a threat, while I conceptually understand that, the day-to-day threats to me when it comes to data online are all American.
Google is not compelled to provide that, though, unless they truly feel
so. No, they do it voluntarily.
Right, but that's a difference. That's the bad part. Otherwise, there would need to be a court order.
How about that law? You just can't. So I should be totally afraid of what the Chinese are going to do to my data. But every day, I unload all this info about me to an American company who then, without a warrant, without my permission, can then simply share it with whomever they want or sell it to whomever they want. And all of this is sanctioned by the United States government through law. I just can't wrap my head to the pivot to, well, we got to ban TikTok. I can't make that the Chinese government is the evil thing here, which they are. I get that, but it's such a threat. Well, if you cared so much about that, why don't you care about all these other threats to my privacy? That's the thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's not caring about those threats, because those are serious issues, and we've talked about them. Like, those matter, but it's a difference between unobstructed access to one of these companies voluntarily providing access.
Sure, which as a politician, I care about until somebody comes along with a check, and then I change my mind, and then I don't care about that anymore.
Right. But I mean, again, in the aftermath of 9/11, with some of the laws that were passed, I mean, there's been many institutions, banking institutions, that can hand over your information to the government if they suspect that you're a terrorist or engaging in terrorist money laundering activities.
And I think that's 1,000% wrong. 1,000% wrong.
And I'm not saying it isn't. And those are issues that we have to tackle, and there needs to be a spotlight on that, and about, like, you know, what are the safeguards in place, and should there be a warrant that's required? But I think it's different than if you're talking about a totalitarian state where there is no way to rebuff a request from the government. Like, there's no separation at all. A company doesn't have the ability to say no to the government ever. Well, that's the difference.
Well, I've already told you I believe Trump's going to be our next president. Well, Trump's already picking winners and losers in this, right? To hell with Facebook, right? Because I don't like them, because they banned me and Zuckerbucks and all of that.
He always picks winners.
So I'm going to pick a winner now. So this company is going to win over this company because I don't like the policies individual to me at this company. That's not China. That's not the Chinese government. I mean, come on. This is what I'm saying. I don't get this. None of this makes sense that we're banning TikTok because of it's a Chinese owned thing. I just don't. The logic, the hypocrisy. This is nothing about consumers, because they have no interest in protecting us online. There's no leverage on this to having this be something now where we can go to a more European data standard where we take more control of our data. And nobody is using this to leverage. What are we doing to the American consumer on the internet? Instead, we're just substituting, well, China bad, easy way, let's do this. And now half the people even dove off that.
But again, if we get to the point in this country where we can pass legislation to regulate social media giants, what they hand over to the government,
we have access. And but you could have everything.
But I mean, even more so. Like, the point is, none of that would have practical impact on a company like TikTok, which would still continue to have foreign access.
The Saudis own half of Twitter. We don't have a problem with that.
They have a stake in Twitter, but Twitter is still based in the United States.
Do you think
they don't? Saudis do not have access to Twitter's servers where the data is collected directly.
So I just want to walk this through. Do you think if they wanted some data, consumer data, political, whatever, they wouldn't get it? I mean, they're funding the operation. Twitter's losing money hand over fist. They pull their funding. I'm not buying that. We have all kinds of foreign investment in social media apps in the United States. I get it. They're still controlled in the United States. Data rules apply. I understand that. I just think the government's made a very piss poor presentation to why TikTok should be banned.
Ah, okay. Well,
here's my question, Brandon. What's the next boogeyman? And what are we going to ban next, right? If Trump gets in the office, Zuck's the next boogeyman, we go after them, right?
Yeah, but
where does this stop?
The difference is we have restrictions on foreign entities operating in our country. I mean, that's not new. I mean, it may be new from the concept of a social media platform, but if you go back in our history and during times of conflict, during times the Cold War, I mean, we didn't allow the Soviets to, you know, operate.
Public-owned
firm, you know, that gave them unfettered access to Americans, you know, buying habits and contact information and, you know, PII. I mean, that's a difference.
I guess I don't care if they ban TikTok, but don't get on TV and tell me how you're doing this to protect me. That's 1,000%. I guess that's the crux of my...
And I know we keep throwing around the word ban, but I mean, there are ways that you can kind of compel TikTok to change practices or to diverge from the parent company and still allow them to operate where you don't have a ban. And so, I mean, use the full levers of, you know, what we have in terms of American regulation to say, you know, there's a national security implication here that we really need to address. How can we address this without banning the app? You know,
they're not saying, hey, social media companies, change your behavior. That they're not saying that at all. They're saying we're targeting this one company because their connection to China. I mean, other companies are collecting the exact same data that everybody gets so upset about. The only difference is, allegedly, the Chinese government has access to it, which I'm sure they do. I just wish a better argument could be made than, well, China owns it. We gotta get rid of this. And I wish somebody would take consumer data protection seriously, which nobody does. Nobody does.
Well, and again, I always go back to where we lack sometimes in legislation that protects our rights, whether it be online or our data and our privacy rights. We still have civil litigation in this country, and we have the courts that allow us to slow down and to at some point provide restitution when those rights are violated. There is no civil litigation system in China.
Nope.
There's no way that you can engage in that if you feel like your rights have been violated or your data has been compromised or your way of life. Yeah. So just, again, I think the differences are very stark.
I just find it odd that I carry a physical device voluntarily with me all day long that the government has said it's a-okie dokie with us for this to spy on you in any way its physical form allows it to do so. And the only real problem we have with that is that that data might be sent to a foreign government. That's our problem. That's the problem. That's the problem we're going to focus on. The idea that we've all just accepted the fact that somebody said it today, our citizenship is being taken from us by some of these companies. I think that's a bit much.
Yeah.
But again, we have to admit, we're being surveilled 24/7 now, and nobody seems to give a big shit.
It's because we value convenience as a society over...
Mostly it's us.
People being
victimized by this don't care.
I mean, I can't tell you how many times from libertarian-minded conservatives who complain, like, I don't want the government knowing this about me or being this involved in my life. But none of those people turn the GPS off their phones. They all use apps that collect information about them. So I'm like, unless you're going to go off the grid or use a non-smartphone, an analog phone, like, I'd like, do you not realize how much power you're relinquishing?
I will end this rant on what I tell all libertarians. I agree with you 1,000%. You should move to Somalia. You should move to an African country with no established government where your personal whatever skill set that you think you have that the government in the United States is suppressing can be allowed to run free.
The same
goes. You'll probably be the main warlord in 6 months. You're so good at it.
That's right. Or go to Haiti because it's devolving into a failed state.
It's about
right now
to fail. I mean, they could use some leadership down there.
I always, this is random, but like the sovereign citizens, that applies to them as well, that whole movement. I went down a YouTube rabbit hole where it was these sovereign citizens that have appeared in court different places in the United States who then won't engage because they tell the judge, like, you're not legitimate. I don't subscribe to a court of law. You can't arrest me. And it's just, it's always satisfying and gratifying to see, like, the rebuke they get and the fact that, like, reality eventually does hit them. Like, you know, you can't just.
I've never seen that work on TV where somebody, oh, you're right, sir, go free now.
No, right, exactly. Yeah, that doesn't happen. And it's weird because it feels like at times they feel like if they just like present the argument that somehow the other side's going to respond, oh, yeah, we didn't think about that. Okay.
You're right.
Know, take the handcuffs off, release them.
How did I get to the federal bench and not know that?
Right. So bizarre.
Oh my God. I would be such a dick as a judge. I mean, it would be, if I knew I couldn't get fired, which as a federal judge, you pretty much don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd be just a total a-hole to people.
Some of these trial judges I think are far too nice with some of these people and have too much patience, because I lose my patience like after 5 minutes. I'm like, okay, just throw the book at this idiot. Like stop letting him go on and on.
I've often thought, could we interview people on this podcast? And the answer is no. Yeah. No, I don't want to interview anybody. The first time I asked you a question and you didn't answer it, I would say, interview's over.
You know, every time I watch somebody on Meet the Press or really any of like member of Congress do an interview where they don't answer the question, like I feel the same way. And I, again, this is a different rant, but I think we have very poor interviewers generally in the media because they don't follow up. They don't push and hammer the question, and they just let them move on and just totally give their spin. Yep. And I'm like, oh, what is wrong with you guys?
If you agreed to come here, you have to answer the questions the way I present them to you. If that's not what you want to do, cool, go somewhere else.
Right. That's all what this is about.
We're just not getting that.
Like, it's not to be a platform for you to just obfuscate and talk about whatever you want.
Are you going to go see Dune 2?
So I was just talking to a good buddy of mine who earlier today, and he called me. He's like, oh my gosh, you have to see Dune 2. It's so
my
good.
Son said it's the Star Wars of this generation.
Yeah. I mean, the reviews have just been remarkable for it. So I'm going to have to go see it. Yeah. And I want to see it while it's like either on IMAX or like the Dolby, screen and sound. So.
I think there are 36 Dune books altogether.
So there's that many.
Get ready, folks, because there's going to be a ton of Dune movies.
Well, that's a franchise that's going to pay dividends for a long time.
Oh, yeah. Let's end with the Oscars.
Yeah, I was hoping you were saying that.
Did you watch the Oscars?
I did.
I thought they were kind of enjoyable.
I thought, you know what? I thought this was kind of like the best Oscars we've had in a long time.
I thought so. They started at a reasonable time, too.
There was nothing ridiculous or crazy. I really liked that they brought the format back about bringing some of the classic actors to give the monologues and then hand off, and then they do the awards like for best actor and best actress. I really liked they hadn't done that since 2009. Yeah. And I thought that's kind of a cool touch. You know, another fellow actor recognizing you for your craft. I was not terribly surprised by any of the award winners. I felt many of them were most of them were justified.
Yeah.
Oppenheimer getting the best picture. Yeah, that was
without a doubt.
Best. I saw most of the movies there. Emma Stone was standout in Poor Things. If you haven't seen that movie, like
I've not seen that, but I love Emma Stone. Everything she does.
Oh my gosh.
Just
this
fantastic.
Has to be probably her best role yet. Yeah. And I always like her as well, but like phenomenal job by her in that movie. And yeah, I thought it was a great show.
And I'm so glad Killers of the Flower Moon didn't win a single Oscar, because no 3.5 hour movie should win anything. Do you know what a 3.5 hour movie is? That's Martin Scorsese masturbating is what it is. That's ridiculous.
I will not go that far.
It's not respecting your audience.
I will say I love the story. I thought, and I liked the movie, but it was too long. Like
it
dragged on. And there were many of those scenes that could have been condensed.
Yes.
But I did think the acting in the movie was great. The story is one that needs to be told because it's one that most Americans don't know about.
Oppenheimer could have lost 25 minutes and been the exact same movie.
Well, I think that's why Jimmy Kimmel's joke was on point when he talked about how this was the year of long movies. He's like, What's with you guys? Like, we stop just, with the long movies.
That's just a director feeling themselves is all that is. Because a 3.5 hour film, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Make it a mini series if you want to go that long.
Right, yeah. Then put it on one of the streaming channels. And, yeah.
You could do a 10-episode prestige series
easily.
By
and
Martin
a lot of,
Scorsese.
We have so many of them now. Yeah, why not?
The movie that we talked about, Napoleon, did you actually watch that?
I did, yeah.
Worst film I've ever seen in my life. I thought that movie was
I didn't
awful.
Think it was the worst film I had ever seen, but it didn't know what it wanted to do, right?
No.
So I couldn't tell, like, is it supposed to be a bioepic? Do they want to focus on, like, the battles? Like, it was all over the place, and it didn't really focus in
one
area.
Why so much with Josephine? I didn't get that.
Yeah.
That's
so, is it supposed to be about the love story, but it wasn't quite just about
that?
There
was no love story between Napoleon and Josephine. He hated her. He cheated on her constantly and left her.
Well, I should say not the love story, but the relationship and the dynamic. Like, it wasn't entirely about that either. It just it danced around so many different areas. I can't even qualify what type of film it was. Really.
So any time you make a movie about Napoleon and people watch it and they don't get the idea that Napoleon was one of the great men in history, a great general, and truly one of the most intelligent human beings to ever live, you've completely done the movie wrong.
Well, it was a missed opportunity. Totally wrong. Yeah. I mean, because it could have been a great movie.
Yeah.
And I think with Joaquin Phoenix, it could have been great casting if it had been done right. So it all goes back to the director.
It's not a movie.
Wasn't that a Ridley Scott film?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ridley Scott's like 84.
Is he that old now?
He's old as dirt.
Damn.
That, like, I didn't realize he was that old. Movie sucked. That movie was terrible.
It was bad. Yeah. Because I saw that in the theater. I was excited to see it.
Duh. Yeah. I watched it on the Apple. It's like,
best that you waited. Yeah.
All right. That's our hour. Thanks, Brandon.
Thanks, Craig.
Thanks for listening to 2 Men in the Middle. Make sure to give us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts. Check out our website at 2meninthemiddle.com. Drop us an email at 2meninthemiddle@gmail.com or tweet at us at 2meninthemiddle. We'll see you next week.